Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, and welcome to the Bard's Grove. This is your hostess, Kat. Lantern is not here with us tonight. He's come down with the flu. And so, Lantern, I say hello to you. I hope you're resting, and I hope you enjoy the stories. So I'm here tonight at the Bard's Grove. If anyone wants to call me, I would love to hear from you. The guest call-in number is 909-265-9104. That's 909-265-9104. But please wait till I'm between stories. But if anyone would love to call in and discuss the story, I would love that. Otherwise, you have me for the next hour. So guess what? Tomorrow morning is a lunar eclipse. I'm sure you've all heard about it by now. People in the western part of North America and in Hawaii and in Eastern Asia will be able to see the eclipse. It's a total eclipse. But if you're in Pacific time, this is practically the best place to watch it. That's where I'm living. And if we get up right around sunrise and we look to the west, we will see the eclipse on the moon, which is setting. And so the moon will look extra big. And then that's at 6:30, it's around the point of total eclipse, because it will be a total eclipse. So we're going to get the best of everything just at the moment. The eclipse itself probably lasts about 3 or 4 hours. Yeah. Anyway, the eclipse lasts for about 3 or 4 hours, and if you wanted to spend the night out there looking at the stars, which some of my friends, they know, are doing out in the desert, wonderful. It's a wonderful night for it. Lunar eclipses, if you haven't seen one, are just fun and amazing. And so I urge you to go and look on Earth's beauty. This eclipse is going to be a lunar eclipse in the sign of Gemini, and then, of course, the sun is in Sagittarius. And as some of you know, if you read my newsletters or if you read anything on the internet, eclipses often mark changes. Eclipses happen when the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun all are level on one plane, or pretty much so. And since it's a total lunar eclipse, it means that the Earth is lined up exactly between the Moon and the Sun, and so our full shadow will shine on the Moon and turn it red with just a touch of turquoise, I hear. So Gemini. So it's a full moon, but it's an eclipse, so it makes it even more intense. The energy is sort of broken up and transformed by having to go around the Earth, and the shadow of the Earth falls on the moon. And so there's just a real sense that something different. It isn't the pure blast of sunlight that reflects off the moon. Now it encompasses us, the Earth. And in some ways, because full moon eclipses, are the lunar eclipses are always full moons, and that's, of course, about awareness. Perhaps our shadow gets projected onto the moon so that we can really see what's going on in us behind the scenes. And, of course, if anyone just has to read the news to see that our shadow is showing, the hypocrisy, the greed, the ineptitude, and the nastiness, the cruelty, the refusal to do anything. I know down at the climate change conference, no one wants to do anything about the Earth. And the scientists are saying we have 5 years at most to really clean up our acts, and yet our leaders do nothing. And we could. We all know that we could change the way we live. It wouldn't be fun necessarily. It wouldn't be happy all the time, but you know, there's this whole idea of a little bit of self-sacrifice for the right reason. And so it's really about a revolution of how we see the world and how we are in the world. And I think that's really what's coming. So anyway, I hope you go out if you have the opportunity, if you're living further enough west that you will be able to see it. I know on the East Coast the eclipse will be at 9 or so. Yeah, I think about 9:30, and so it will be light. So the people on the East Coast won't be able to see it, but those of us in Pacific time and further west will be able to catch it, and I urge you to. So if you'll excuse me for a minute, I have to take a drink of water, and if anyone wants to call, the call-in number is 909-265-9104. So today, I like to keep themes, as you all know, and since the sun is still in Sagittarius, and this whole eclipse is very much about what do we believe and how do we think. Gemini is really the patterns of our thinking, the categories of how we think. And some people's categories are so narrow because they are from centuries ago or even 50 years back. We can't go back. The world has expanded way too much. And so we can choose what we believe, and then out of that will come how we think about things. So Sagittarius is very much about belief and curiosity and expanding our horizons. And so this is one of the ways we can do it. I've decided that tonight I would tell you a few Italian folk tales that were collected by Italo Calvino, who is marvelous. Anyway, this story is called The Magic Ring. And we can tell that it's a Sagittarius fairy tale right from the beginning, because Sagittarius is always moving and exploring and expanding horizons. So think of that as you listen to this tale, The Magic Ring. A poor boy said to his mother, "Mama, I'm leaving home and going out into the world. Nobody in this town esteems me, and if I stay here, I'll never amount to anything. I'm going out to make a fortune, and better days will come for you too." At that, he departed. He came to a city and was strolling through the streets when he saw a little old woman trudging up a hilly lane with two heavy buckets of water and gasping for breath. And so he approached her and said, "Let me carry the water. You'll never make it up the hill with such a load." He took the buckets, followed her to her cottage, went up to the steps, and set the water down in the kitchen. In the room were many cats and dogs that all crowded around the old woman, purring or wagging their tails. "How can I show you my appreciation?" asked the old woman. The young man said, "Don't mention it. It's a pleasure to help you." "Now wait a minute," said the woman, and left the room. She came back with a little ring of no value and slipped it on his finger, saying, "This is a precious ring, mind you. Every time you turn it and ask for something, you will get your wish. Just be careful not to lose the ring, for that would be your undoing. To lessen that risk, I'm giving you one of my dogs and one of my cats, and they'll follow you wherever you go. They're very smart animals, and sooner or later, they'll probably prove quite useful to you." Well, the young man thanked her over and over and then left the house. But he really set little store by her words. "Ugh, old wives' tales," he said to himself. And I bet a lot of you women out there listening can just hear your man saying the same thing when you mention magic. Old wives' tales, not even thinking to give the ring a twist just to see what would happen. He left the city with the dog and cat trotting along beside him. Now, he really loved animals, and he was happy to have these two animals with him. And so running and jumping with him, he had fun, and he entered the forest. And then night fell, and he made his bed under a tree with the dog and the cat lying there beside him. But he couldn't go to sleep because of the hunger gnawing away in his stomach. Then he remembered the ring, and he thought, "Well, you know, it won't hurt to give it a try. What the heck?" And so he turned the ring, and he said, "I wish for food and drink." Well, he hadn't gotten the words out of his mouth before there appeared three chairs and a table laden with all kinds of food and drink. He took a seat and he tied a napkin around his neck. And then in the other two chairs, the cat and the dog sat, and he tied napkins around their necks. And all three of them started eating with great relish. And you see now, he had confidence in that ring. When the meal was over, he stretched out on the ground and considered all the wonderful things that he would now be able to do. The hardest part was making a choice, and I exactly know how that goes. If any of you have ever gone out to try to buy a lottery ticket and imagined winning it, I'm sure you can understand this young man's problem. Well, for a while he imagined he would like piles of silver and gold. And then he dreamt of horses and carriages, and then castles and land. And then the more he mused, the less he knew what he wanted. But here I go losing my head, he said finally, and he was exhausted from building these castles in the air. I've heard so often that people become perfect fools when they grow rich, but I intend to keep my wits about me at all times. That's enough for today. I'll give the matter some thought tomorrow. He turned over and went sound asleep while the dog curled up at his feet and the cat at his head, and they kept watch over him. When he woke up, the sun was already high in the sky and shining through the green treetops. A gentle wind blew, the birds sang, and he found himself completely refreshed by his night's sleep. He thought of asking the ring for a horse, but the forest was so lovely he decided to cross it on foot. He thought of ordering breakfast, but such delicious wild strawberries grew in the forest that he made a meal of them instead. He then thought of calling for a drink, but in the forest was the spring of the clearest water in the world, and so he just cupped his hands and drank from it. Wandering through fields and meadows, he came at last to a large palace. A beautiful maiden happened to be looking out the window and smiled warmly at the carefree youth advancing so sprightly with a dog and a cat right behind him. He looked up, and although the ring was safe, his heart was lost. Now is indeed the time to use the ring, he decided. Turning it, he said, let a palace rise opposite this one, outdoing it in beauty and containing every comfort. Well, in the twinkling of an eye, the palace was there, far bigger and more beautiful than the other, and he was inside as though he had always lived there, with the dog sleeping in his basket and the cat lying by the fireplace licking his paws. Going to a window and opening it, the young man found himself directly across from the beautiful maiden's window. Well, they smiled at each other, they sighed, and the young man realized the moment had come to go and ask for her hand in marriage. Well, she was as pleased as her parents, and in a few days' time, they were married. Their first night together, after many kisses and embraces and caresses, the woman jumped up and said, but do tell me just how your palace sprouted all of a sudden like a mushroom. He wasn't sure whether he should tell her, but, you know, she was his wife. And you really can't keep secrets from your wife, now can you? He therefore told her about the ring. And then they fell asleep in bliss. But while he was sleeping, his wife slipped the ring off his finger, then got up, called all the servants and said, leave this palace at once. We are returning to my parents' house. When she was safely home, she turned the ring, saying, let my husband's palace be removed to the highest and steepest peak of the mountain in the distance. And you know that palace vanished as though it never existed. She looked at the mountain and saw the castle posed on the peak and was happy. Well, the young man awakened in the morning. And when he found his wife gone, he threw open the window and beheld the void. Taking a closer look, he made out deep ravines down below and mountains all around him blanketed in snow. He went to touch the ring, but it too was gone. He called the servants, but no one answered. Instead, the dog and the cat ran in. They had stayed there because he told his wife only about the ring and said nothing about the two animals. Completely baffled at first, he gradually realized his wife had cruelly betrayed him. But the truth was little consolation to him. He peered out to see if he was going to be able to get down the mountain. But the doors and the windows, alas, opened onto empty space, with the ravine plunging straight downward. The supplies in the palace would last only a few days, and the terrible thought struck him that he would then starve to death. Seeing their master so downcast, the animals approached. And the dog spoke, don't give up hope yet, master. The cat and I will find our way down these cliffs, and then we'll get the ring for you. Oh, my dear pet, said the young man, you're my only hope. Were it not for you, I'd jump off these cliffs rather than starve to death. The dog and the cat then took off and climbed out of the house, leapt down the cliffs, and came to the foot of the mountain. They raced across the plain to a river, where the dog took the cat on his back and swam to the other bank. When they arrived at that faithless wife's palace, it was already night and the whole house was sound asleep. In through the cat door, they tiptoed, and the cat told the dog, "You stay here now and keep watch while I go upstairs and see what can be done." And without a sound, the cat rushed up the stairs and down the hall to the room where that false-hearted woman was sleeping. But the door was shut, and he couldn't get in. While he thought frantically what to do, a rat ran by, and the cat grabbed him. It was a big, fat rat who began begging and pleading with the cat to spare him. "Please, please, please, I'll do anything." "Okay, I will," said the cat, "but you must gnaw a hole in this door big enough for me to crawl through." The rat began to gnaw at once. He gnawed until he was blue in the face, but the hole was still too little, not only for the cat, but for the rat himself to get through. So the cat said, "Do you have any little ones?" "I should say so. I have 7 or 8, each one as rambunctious as can be," said that rat. "Well, good. Run and get one," said the cat. "And if you don't come back, I'll eat you. I'll catch you and I'll eat you alive wherever you are." Well, that rat ran off and he came back in a trice with a little rat. "Listen, little one," said the cat. "If you are clever, you'll save your father's life. Go into this woman's room, crawl into her bed, and pull off the ring she has on her finger." The little rat ran inside, but was back in no time, quite upset. "She hasn't got a ring." The cat, however, didn't lose heart. "Well, that just means she has it in her mouth. Go back, slap her nose with your tail, and she'll sneeze, opening her mouth. The ring will drop out. You'll pick it up quickly and run back here with it." Everything happened the way the cat said. In a little while, the rat returned with the ring, and the cat took it and bounded down the steps. "Do you have the ring?" asked the dog. "Of course," said the cat. They plunged through the front door and headed back the way they had come. But down deep, the dog was consumed with jealousy because the cat had been the one to get the ring. Arriving at the river, the dog said, "Give me the ring and I'll ferry you across." The cat refused and they started arguing. During the quarrel, the cat let go of the ring and it fell into the water where a fish swallowed it. In a flash, the dog grabbed the fish in its mouth and then he had the ring. He carried the cat to the other bank, but they didn't make up and they continued to argue all the way to their master's palace. "Do you two have the ring?" The dog spit out the fish. The fish spit out the ring, but the cat said, "Don't believe him. I got the ring myself and the dog stole it from me." "But if I'd not caught the fish, and the ring would have gone and been lost forever," said Yap the dog. Well, the youth petted them both, saying, "My dears, don't argue so much. You're both very dear and precious to me." And for a half hour, he caressed the dog with one hand and the cat with the other until both the animals were again good friends. He took them into the palace and turned the ring on his finger and said, "Let my palace take the place of my false-hearted wife's while she and her entire palace come here where I am now." At that, the two palaces sailed through the air and changed places with one another. His landed right in the middle of the plain. Hers, with her inside screaming like an eagle, perched on the sharp peak. Well, the young man sent for his mother and made her last years as joyous as he had promised. The cat and the dog remained with him, always quarreling a little about something or other, but in all, everyone lived in harmony. And the ring? He used it occasionally, but not so much, thinking, "And how truly? It's not good for a man to get everything he wants without effort." When they went up the mountain, they found his wife cold and dead. She had starved to death. It was a bitter end, but, you know, she deserved nothing better. And so ends the tale of the magic ring. Whew, that was an interesting tale, wasn't it? A little bit of magic, which is very Sagittarian. Also the fact of the two animals, the dog and the cat. If you think about Sagittarius, the image for Sagittarius is a horse man. And Sagittarius is very much about how do we bring our physicality and our spirituality together. And so, because of his kindness, this young man was put in touch, and also because he honored the feminine. You know, women can endure much. We work hard. No offense, men. We think that you do a great job too. But, you know, women's one, you know, one of the talents women have is endurance and patience. And we do do a lot of work, and we do take care of our people. And so for this young man to do that, to love and honor this woman who wasn't his mother, but who was an older woman, it showed that he had kindness, compassion, and a bit of wisdom. And so because he helped, as in all fairy tales, he got some helpers himself. And that's the magic of fairy tales. Once you help someone else, they will come back and help you in their time of need, in your time of need, if you help them in their time of need. Excuse me, I have a piece of ice in my mouth. Okay. So here we have this fairy tale, and it's about a young man and a magic ring. And so what is this idea of a magic ring? I mean, we have Sauron's ring. We have the elfin rings and the dwarf rings and the nine rings of the Black Riders. So there's, and of course, kings and queens have rings that they wear. That rings have often been the symbol of power, if you will. So when you have a ring that gives you your wishes, perhaps it's a sense of your own creativity and being able to create creatively, manifest anything you want. This is magic, and that's why it's called a magic ring. The Secret was trying to talk about it, but they didn't realize that you don't often, you're not supposed to always do magic on other people. Well, that's a definite. You never create a spell with someone specific in mind, because then you take away their free will. But you can do magic. You can ask for an increase. You can ask for creativity. You can focus your intention not on getting $1 million and buying the biggest house, or maybe 10 of them that you can, but on what's balanced. And that's the, one of the reasons I love this fairy tale. You know, he could have ordered a horse up or a carriage, but he decided it was beautiful and he walked in the woods. He could have ordered breakfast, like room service, but he decided that nature had given him beautiful food to eat and he would just use that. So he had a wonderful perspective, this young man, which I gather he learned from his mother, because we don't have a father in this. So he's a son of a mother. And so often the men who honor the feminine have that balance. And so he knew to touch lightly on the magic, only when he was in need. And of course, like a man, his need arrived. I love the part too when he tried to decide what he was going to do and ask for. So many of us, in the same way, we buy lottery tickets and we build castles in the air. And there he was building those castles, but then he came down to earth, and that was the good part. When you have creativity, when you use magic, when you form intentions, it's not about, I want to be a millionaire. It's not about going and becoming the thing that right now 99% of the people in the world are saying isn't the right way to live. It's about having enough, having the right balance. And so this is a wonderful tale, I think, that talks about the balance that we all need in our lives between getting what we want and working for what we want, as it said in the end. So anyway, I'm going to take one tiny break as we do. This is Blog Talk Radio, and this is The Bard's Grove, and I will be back in a minute. Hello and welcome to the Bard's Grove again. This is Cat. Brother Lantern is laid up in bed with the flu, so he can't tell any stories tonight. And so you have me here. I don't know if anyone is listening and if you're interested in calling in, but I'd certainly talk to anyone about that marvelous Italian fairy tale that I just told, called The Magic Ring. It's such a beautiful Sagittarius story. And if you'd like to call in, the number is 909-265-9104. That's 909-265-9104. So, as I've been talking about, we're in the astrological month of Sagittarius, and it's all about expanding our philosophical mind, if you will, including the natural laws of the universe. Sagittarius is about law, but it's about cosmic law. The Egyptians called them the netters. Jung called them the archetypes. But there's certain laws that are applicable to not only the Earth herself, the solar system, the universe, but also to us as well. And so in Sagittarius, we look at what we believe, because what we believe is the basis of how we think about things. And this eclipse that's coming tonight and tomorrow morning in Gemini and Sagittarius is really all about making us aware of how our thoughts reflect those beliefs, and how our beliefs, maybe when they're not in tune with how we think about them, maybe we need to let them go. So since we're at a crossroads, which is what an eclipse is, if you will, there's a shift that comes. Something is old leaves, so we leave behind the whole idea that there's not enough. The gift economy, the whole idea of sharing, is so important. Here's this young man in the story we just told. He saw an old woman struggling to just bring water, to bring life to herself, and he stopped to help. His compassion, his ability to reach out, you know, in turn, and then his being able to say, no, you don't have to pay me, constellates that gift back. And so there's so many new ways that we can live. I think the Occupy movement is showing us that. And while I've heard a lot of people grouching about them and they don't work and they're making a mess and it's not sanitary, they're doing a wonderful job. And work isn't the be-all and end-all of life. Doing the right work might be, but not working necessarily for corporations. So they're doing their work. Occupy movement, I thank you for doing the work of standing up to power. And the revolution is beginning, and it's beginning with you. So anyway, to go back to the theme of Sagittarius, once again, I mentioned in the beginning of that story, is we sort of know it's a Sagittarian story because it, right away the young man leaves town. He wants to expand his horizons, and that's certainly something that Sagittarius is always looking to do. Ruled by Jupiter, the king of the gods, Jupiter always took advantage of any opportunities he had to find a new love, to explore a new space. There's a sense of curiosity that comes along with that. So this is another story from the Italian fairy tales, and it's called Body Without Soul. Now, another aspect of Sagittarius, as I said, is spirituality and cosmic law. And this is a tale, I think, that speaks a little bit to that. Body Without Soul. There was a widow with a son named Jack, who at 13 wanted to leave home to seek his fortune. But his mother said to him, "What do you expect to do out in the world? Don't you know you're still a little boy? When you're able to fell that pine tree behind the house with one kick, then you can go." Well, day after day after that, as soon as the little boy rose in the morning, Jack would go with a running start and he would jump against the trunk of the tree with both feet. But the pine never budged an inch, and he fell flat on his back. He would get up again, shake the dirt off, and he would go back inside. At last, one fine morning, he jumped with all his might, and the tree gave way and toppled to the ground, with the roots right up into the air. Jack ran and got his mother, who, surveying the felled tree, said, "You may now go wherever you wish, my son." And so Jack bade her farewell and set out. Now, after walking for days and days, he came to a city whose king had a horse named Rondello that no one had ever been able to ride. People constantly tried, but were thrown just when it appeared they would succeed. Looking on, Jack soon realized that the horse was afraid of its own shadow, so he volunteered to break Rondello himself. He began by going up to the horse in the stable, talking to it and petting it, and then he suddenly jumped into the saddle, and he rode the animal outside straight into the sun. That way it couldn't see any shadow to frighten it. Jack took a steady hold on the reins, pressed his knees to the horse, and he galloped off. A quarter of an hour later, Rondello was as docile as a lamb, but let no one ride him after that but Jack. From then on, Jack served the king, who was so fond of him that the other servants grew jealous and plotted to get rid of him. Now, the king had a daughter who had been kidnapped in her infancy by the sorcerer Body Without Soul, and no one had heard of her since. So the servants went to the king, claiming Jack had boasted to everyone that he would free her. The king sent for Jack, and Jack was amazed and said, "This is the first I've ever heard that you've had a daughter." But the fact that anyone had dared to make light of this episode concerning his daughter so infuriated the king that he said, "Well, either you free her or I'll behead you." Since there was no calming the king, now Jack asked for a rusty sword that he kept hanging on the wall, saddled Rondello, and rode off. Crossing a forest, he saw a lion motioning him to stop. A lion! Although a bit uneasy, Jack disliked the idea of running away. So he dismounted and asked what the lion wanted. "Jack," said the lion, "as you can see, there are four of us here. Myself, a dog, an eagle, and an ant. We have a dead donkey to parcel among us. Since you have the sword, would you carve the animal and give each of us a portion?" Well, Jack thought about it for a minute and he thought, "Great, I can do this." Jack cut off the donkey's head and he gave it to the ant. "Here you are. This will make you a nice home and supply you with all the food you'll ever want." Next, he cut off the hoofs and gave them to the dog. "Here's something to gnaw on as long as you like." He cut out the entrails and gave it to the eagle. "Here's your food, which you can carry to the treetops where you perch." And all the rest he gave to the lion, which, as the biggest of the four, deserved the largest portion. And that's why they say that you might get the lion's share. Well, he got back on his horse after that and started off, but only to hear his name called. "Dear me," he thought, "I must have made a mistake in dividing the parts. Oh, no." But the lion said to him, "Jack, you did us a big favor, and you know you were very fair. As one good deed deserves, I'm giving you one of my claws, which will turn you to a faceless lion when you wear it." And the dog said, "Jack, one of my whiskers will turn to fastest lion." And Jack, "Here's a feather from my wings, which can change you into the biggest and strongest eagle in the sky." And finally, the little ant came and said, "I'm giving you one of my tiny legs. Put it on and you will become an ant so small no one can see you, even with a magnifying glass." Well, Jack took its presents and thanked the But I think we're back on now. So what happened was that the lion had just called Jack back and said, the lion, the ant, the dog, and the eagle all gave Jack a bit of themselves that he could use. So Jack took his presents, thanked the four animals, and departed, as he was uncertain whether the gifts were magic or not, thinking the animals may have played a joke on him. He stopped as soon as he was out of sight to test them. He believed in magic. Well, he became a lion, a dog, an eagle, and an ant. And next, an ant, an eagle, a dog, and a lion. Then eagle, ant, lion, and dog. Finally, dog, lion, ant, and eagle. Yes, everything worked like a charm. Ugh, all smiles, Jack moved onward. Beyond the forest was the lake, on whose shores stood the castle of Body Without Soul. He sort of sounds like Voldemort, doesn't he? Voldemort. Jack changed into an eagle and flew straight to the edge of a window. Then he changed into an eagle and rolled into a room. It was a beautiful chamber where he came. Lakings. Still, I said, signaling for silence, I've come to free you. You must get the sorcerer to tell you what would kill him. Well, when the sorcerer returned, Jack turned back into an ant. The king's daughter made a big to-do over a body without soul, seating him at her feet and drawing his head into her lap. And then she began, my darling sorcerer, I know you're a body without a soul and therefore incapable of dying, but I live in constant fear of someone finding your soul and putting you to death. Well, I can tell you the secret, said the sorcerer, since you're imprisoned here and cannot possibly betray me. To slay me would require a lion mighty enough to kill the black lion in the forest. But out of the belly of the dead lion would leap a black dog so swift that only the fastest dog on earth could catch it. Out of the belly of the dead black dog would fly a black eagle that could withstand every eagle under the sun. But if chance that eagle was slain, a black egg would have to be taken out of its claw and cracked over my brow for my soul to fly away and leave me dead. Now, does that seem easy? Do you have any real grounds to be worried? And so, of course, the princess said no. Well, with his tiny ears, Jack took in every word, then crawled back under the window to the ledge, where he was once again, he turned himself into an eagle, and he soared into the forest. There he changed into a lion and stalked the underbrush until he came face to face with the black lion. The black lion jumped him, but Jack, being the strongest lion in the world, tore it to bits. And back at the castle, the sorcerer felt his head spin. The lion's belly was split open and out bolted a swift-footed black dog. But Jack turned into the fastest dog on earth, caught him, and they rolled together in a ball, biting each other until the black dog lay dead. Back at the castle, the sorcerer had to take to his bed. The dog's belly was split open and out flew a black eagle. But Jack became the most powerful eagle under the sun, and they soared through the sky, pecking and clawing each other until the black eagle folded its wings and fell to earth. And at the castle, the sorcerer ran a high fever and curled up under the bedclothes. Jack changed back into a man, opened the eagle's claw, and removed the black egg. He returned to the castle and gave it to the king's daughter, who was overjoyed. How on earth did you get it? She asked. Nothing to it, said Jack. The rest is now up to you. The king's daughter entered the sorcerer's bedchamber, asking, how do you feel, my dear? Woe's me, I've been betrayed. I brought you a cup of broth, said the princess. Drink some. The sorcerer sat up in his bed and bent over the drink to drink the broth. Here, let me crack an egg into it and give it more body. At that, the king's daughter broke the black egg on the sorcerer's brow, and Body Without Soul died on the spot. Well, that trickster and wonderful guy Jack, he took the king's daughter home to her father, and everyone was so overjoyed that the young couple got married that very day. And that is the end of the story. So there's another wonderful Sagittarian fairy tale. As you all know, Jung and Marie-Louise von Franz and most Jungians, we think of fairy tales as sort of the pattern that needs to be followed if you want to heal something. It's an archetypal pattern that tells you what to do. So in this one, here's this young boy and he goes out to explore, to expand his horizons. And basically, the first thing he meets is the lion and the dog and the ant and the eagle. And interestingly enough, I think that they represent the four functions. Okay? Jung said that we have four functions. We probably have more, but these are very good psychological functions. We have intuition, which is that knowing in the instant, seeing the big picture, getting the whole thing. And I think the lion represents that. And it's also our passion. And then we have the dog who runs as swift as the wind. And I think that it has to do with our thinking. You know, our thoughts can fly, if you will. Now, the eagle, once again, I'm talking too much. We have the eagle, we have the lion, we have the dog, and we have the ant. The ant represents the earth. I think it represents patience. Let's give them, rather than even the four functions, four different things. I think that the lion represents passion and, of course, is fire. I think the eagle is air and represents thinking and seeing and wisdom, if you will. And the dog represents the ability to, and I guess you would say feelings, because the dog is the one who guards our boundaries and so is in touch with the feeling realms. But anyway, you look at it, here's these different functions, these different animals, these different instincts, and they're exactly the instincts he needs to go up against this wizard without a body, without a soul, body without a soul. You know, and that seems to me to be a very telling image, because isn't that what so much of our mechanistic culture is like? It's a body without a soul. We've created machines that can do amazing things, but it has no soul. We've created an economic system that wants to trundle along the way it's been going for the last at least 100 years and more, 200 or 300 years. And it's has no soul anymore. Body without a soul, and it's captured the feeling tone, it's captured the princess. So this is the new feeling, and it's been raping and pillaging her ever since her birth. And it speaks, I think, to our time, and it says, what do we need to do? And our men and our masculine side, we need to get balanced. We need to have those four abilities, the strength, the swiftness, the ability to fly high and soar, the ability to get small and be patient. All of those qualities are needed, whether in the Occupy movement or just in life. So there's another sad story for us, if you will. Now, I'm seeing here that no one's calling in, and so because we still have a little bit more time. We have about 15 more minutes, but my throat is giving out. I am going to say to you all, I hope you come back to the Bard's Grove next week. Next week we will be our last week, and then the week after that is Christmas, and the week after that is New Year's. Hopefully we'll be back in the new year. So next week on the Bard's Grove, we will have a winter solstice tale, and we will have other Christmassy stories for you. And so, merry meet and merry part and merry meet again. Till next week at the bar. Good night, Lantern. I hope you're still in there.